Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Main Street Universe. My name is Daniel Michael, and I'm back out here in Cafe Fairfax Studios. I'm still awaiting our guest, Mr. Taylor Elwood. Now, Taylor is someone I have spoken to before. It's been a while. I did send him a reminder. I sent him the number and the correct number to call in. So, before we get started, I'll just wait for Taylor a little bit longer. And then if not, we may just go ahead and begin with our brief Ostara ritual and maybe talk a little bit about prosperity and prosperity magic. And just double checking my messages. Oh, there we go. I see in the queue. It's spinning as it does. There is your symbol. Welcome to Main Street Universe.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
You're quite welcome, and it's nice to hear your voice again.
Thank you. It's quite nice to be on here and hear your voice as well.
Absolutely. And as you may have heard, we sometimes do Main Street Universe from a music studio. So I'm out here near the drum kit, which is kind of tempting, but I'll try to keep away.
You can drown me out when you don't like an answer you hear.
Or if I'm saying one that's not too bright, I'll just start hitting the drum. Go, what did I just say?
Oh, they're right. That sounds good.
So, anyway, you've written a few books, and you actually do quite a few things. I actually first, as an intro for everyone out there, I first ran into Taylor Elwood at our local New Age shop here, not in person, of course. I ran into one of his books, and it was an essay book that I thought was done quite well, and it was called Prosperity, or Manifesting Prosperity, and it was actually a series of essays that was written, and it introduced me to another author, and I bought one of his books, and that was Wes Unruh, and I bought his book, The Art of Memetics. Memetics. How do you say it when it's in the long form?
Memetics.
Okay. So I had it right the first time. Good. All right. So, Taylor, you've written... Now, that was a collection of essays, but you've written a new book now, and I wonder if you can discuss this new one you've written.
Yes, Manifesting Wealth. It just came out at the end of January, and it is a holistic approach to prosperity magic. I use the word holistic because I don't focus just on how to improve your relationship with finances or how to get a job or how to improve your working situation. I look at health, relationships. I also look at it from the perspective if you want to own a business and how you can apply magic to that. So I look at a variety of topics that aren't typically addressed in the majority of books that are out there on wealth magic.
And one thing that I found interesting in your approach, and we'll get to some specific stuff in your books without giving the whole thing away, I guess, is I've read some things that you have written, whether it be on your information or your website, and you brushed across it briefly just now when you said a holistic approach. And I remember you writing one time that the way you view magic now is not necessarily to impose your will on nature, but in fact to work with nature in a progressive way. I wonder if you could expand on that just a little bit.
Well, I think that for a lot of times when we start out with magic, what you see is a lot of people who go with the notion of, okay, I'm going to go out there and and get specific results, and I'm gonna kind of force reality to my will. And it's a very Western approach. It's not just a magical approach. It's just a very Western approach in general. I mean, we come from a culture that's steeped in that kind of perspective, where it's go out there and conquer the land and get it to conform to your will, and bugger the consequences. Well, I think we're dealing with some of those consequences now when we look at how strange the weather has become. And I think the same can be applied to magic, and that a lot of times you have a very reactive approach in Western magic where, okay, a problem occurs, and what do? You do magic to solve it. And then after that, the problem goes away for a little while, and then it comes back. And what do? You do magic to solve it. But what you're not really looking at is your own role in it. And you're not looking at how you are essentially investing, and you're essentially investing yourself in the problem itself. And if you don't look at that in your own role in the problem, then the problem that occurs is that it keeps coming back. A holistic approach is, a work-with approach is one that says, all right, yes, I'm a magician. Yes, I can do some stuff that is, pretty impressive with magic. But what I can also do is work with the forces around me. Instead of trying to force my way to get something, I can work with it. And I may actually find that it's easier if I choose to work with it. And that's my perspective when it comes to magic, is that it's actually much easier to get things to occur when you work with, as opposed to trying to force something. You have to exert a lot more effort to force something in order to force a result to occur. But if you learn to work with reality, if you learn to work with what's around you and you utilize magic as part of that process, you actually find it gets a lot easier. I liken my approach to magic to taking the path of least resistance, where, I'll do magic, but what I'll do is I will allow it to go along that path of least resistance because it's a lot easier to get specific results instead of trying to work against something or force something. Work with it. Turn it from an obstacle into an aid. And that's somewhat of an Eastern approach. In the Far Eastern cultures, you have that tendency to you see that tendency to work with, which isn't to say that sometimes force isn't warranted. Sometimes it is. But even then, it's knowing when to utilize force in order to get what you want. It's not using force indiscriminately. It's using force tactically and strategically in order to achieve specific outcomes.
I really like that, because so many people, especially starting out, it's a really interesting lesson. I said starting out even for veterans. It's a really interesting lesson for people that are going, gosh, I've had one magical success here, but man, I haven't had one. So they feel good and they go, oh gosh, I haven't had one in a long time. And the wind's completely against them. I'll just use wind as a force right here. And they're going, I want $10 million or whatever it is. But they're not going with what's around them that they can use to their advantage. The forces that are going in the proper way to their advantage. So I think that's a very interesting, and like you said, somewhat Eastern approach of don't fight the thing. Let or grab onto the stream that is flowing and find a creative way to use that. So I think that's really a great answer to that.
Well, and one thing that I would note too is that using that example of 10 million, like, okay, you want to get 10 million. What do you want to do with that 10 million? A lot of times people are really short-sighted when it comes to magic. They focus on the short-term goal, but they don't think about the long-term goal. Well, what are you going to do with that 10 million? I'm a business coach, so I always tell people, don't tell me that you just want to make money. Because if you say to me that you just want to make money, it doesn't tell me anything. If that's your end goal, it's not really a goal. It's money is always a means to an end, and if you treat it as an end in itself, you'll never have enough, because you'll never know that you have enough. Whereas if you know that money is an end to is a means to an end, what you'll discover then is that you'll actually define what that end is. You'll define the result, and then you'll start planning toward it, and you'll figure out how much money you need in order to get that result, and you'll get that accordingly. And that's true with just magic in general. I liken my approach to magic and really to life and everything else as plan by design instead of react. Reaction is always short-sighted. It's always in the moment. It's always a response to something that's happening to you, which means you're not in control of the situation. And occasionally we all have to react. And there are uses for reaction. I mean, if you're driving and you're about to get into an accident, a reaction at that time is really helpful because that could save your life. But in general, reactions aren't that useful. They're instinctual. They're done as a response to the environment, and consequently the environment ends up controlling you. And this is why the idea of forceful magic and trying to get results in the way that Western magic so often emphasizes is actually an illusion, because it's still a response to a reaction. It's not planned by design. A plan by design, on the other hand, is one where you define the results. You define what it is that you really want, not just for the short term, but for the long term. You figure out what it's going to take to get you there and how you're going to do it. And then you figure out where magic fits into that. And you accept everything you do has to be driven toward achieving those goals. And I don't really see that a lot happen with just people in general. I'm not just even talking about magicians. I don't see that kind of approach a lot because we all get caught up in our everyday lives. But speaking as someone who actually has taken that approach and is applying it to my life and applying it to what I do magically, I found that I am living a much happier and successful life precisely because I'm planning for it. And consequently, it's much easier. And I personally am all for making life as easy to live as possible, because quite frankly, we all have enough troubles as it is. Why do we need to add on more of our own making?
Right. And it's definitely, and I see my associate producer is here as well, and I'll bring her on the line in just a second, Janice. I'm across the other side of the room, but I see her number there in the studio. And it's something I've been thinking about so much that recently, as far as, you know, my age being 43, and I've done the interesting side of life in some ways, but I haven't been a planner and a builder. Like, I've done a lot of things that maybe a lot of people haven't done. You know, I've run for political office. I'm a musician. I'm a writer. I've met, you know, a lot of interesting people in my pursuits. I'm an artist. And I've lived all these things that are my passions, but I historically was not a good planner. And so people would say, gosh, with your energy and your brain and your talent, you should be very much more successful than you are. So that's been like my lesson of this year. It's like, okay, I've learned whatever gypsy lessons I need to learn. Now it's time for me to be a good builder and planner. And even tapping into sometimes, because I've been reading, as I mentioned, a few other, our guest last week was a chaos magician, and I've been reading some of that stuff too. And it is interesting. There's one great quote I remember that says, to accomplish great things, you should have a little bit of chaos in your soul. I forget who said it, but I thought it was a great quote. But anyway, I really think your message is a very good and positive one, though, about not just reacting, because then you're not changing anything. Then all you're doing is going, well, I'm going to do this little bit of thing that works for me, whether that be magical or non-magical, and then I'm going to move on, and then I'm going to repeat the same exact patterns. So I think your message is incredibly positive.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I'm going to bring on my co-host and associate producer, Janice R. White, hostess as well of the World Reggae Party. And your microphone is spinning. Welcome, Janice.
Welcome, Daniel. Welcome, Taylor. How are you?
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm feeling very good.
Oh, happy to have you. Sorry I'm late. But rather late than never, as they say.
Yes.
Exactly.
So, Taylor, did Daniel give you my unemployment question?
We have not.
No, he didn't.
There yet. But go ahead, Janice, and ask.
Oh, okay. Well, you know that I taken myself, and I just had a kind of a bad spell where 2 years I didn't have anything job-wise, and I know it was a very lesson type of time for me, but now things are starting to get better, but they're slowly getting better, much more slowly than what I wanted or what I thought would happen. And I know I'm not the only person in this, whether it be pagan, Christian, you know, Hindu or whatever. There's a lot of people basically struggling right now. So what would your advice be for somebody who is either underemployed or unemployed, and they've been unemployed for a while? Because the people that have jobs have this kind of notion that we're lazy or we're too picky or some kind of in between lazy and picky. And they don't seem to really realize that there's, you know, some genuine struggle out there. So what would your advice would be?
Well, I think, first of all, you're making a very accurate point that there is some genuine struggle. I have a friend of mine who has been out of work for a couple of years now, and he's only now getting back to work, it looks like. And he's being hired, ironically enough, back by the very company that had had initially chosen to go out there and say, we don't want you. And they're hiring him back on a contract basis, which means he's only going to be back there for 3 months, maybe longer if they extend it. So it's not an ideal situation for him. Now, I would say that one of the things that he's done is he's looked into, you know, starting his own business. And I would argue that starting your own business is not necessarily as expensive as a lot of people think it is. Sometimes it comes right down to, you know, coming up with some type of product that you can already make. Like if you're good at crocheting or sewing, then you come up with something that you make there or that way. Or if you're, you know, you're good at making a specific type of, you know, incense or oil, and I'm just throwing ideas out here, you know, that's something that you can do. One thing that I would really suggest to anybody that's in your situation, and I say this because I kind of did this the hard way myself, is start to explore multiple income streams. Because I think that the one thing that we've all come away from is realizing that there is no such thing there's no such thing as safety or security.
Right.
You know, we all want safety and security, but we don't have that, and we're not going to have that. That's not going to be coming back. So what we really have to do is examine carefully what it is that we are really willing to do to actually create our own reality through not just going back to a job, but looking into these other income streams. Now, as far as the job itself goes, you know, again, some of the challenge is going to be, okay, I have this set idea as to what kind of job that I want to work at, and if that kind of job isn't out there, then it may be time to look at what you can do at what else you can find out there or what you can explore that's going to be different. And, of course, that's not necessarily easy in and of itself, because we may be talking about going back to school. Okay, well, then that's more debt, Taylor. Do I really want to be doing that? So it could be that, or it could be, oh, okay, Taylor, I'm taking a part-time job that I really don't want to take at a minimum wage job. Well, again, I get that that's not something that we necessarily want to do. I think that it's important, even in those cases, to always look toward an eye toward upward. Define the result. What is it you really want? And anything you have to do in the meantime, you look at as a way of building momentum toward achieving what it is that you want. So let's say the job that you really want isn't there right now. Do whatever you can to research for that job. Find out network with whoever you can. And in the meantime, do other work that you can do that's going to help you actually get in front of those people. And do whatever it is. And
I definitely see that because what actually with my particular case is I got a job at Macy's, and it was fine. It was working with Chanel, which is a very expensive just cosmetics and perfume, but it got me out there, and it got me in front of people. I had to dress up every day. I had to wear makeup every day, and a lot of it, actually. And, you know, but it got me, you know, right in front of people where I could talk to people and try to persuade them to buy the Chanel product that wasn't already, you know, regular customers. And that was only for a month and a half, but it was still a month and a half. And to me, it kind of got the ball rolling, because before then, I wasn't working at all. And, you know, you don't get any money if you don't work at all. You know, it's kind of a simple equation there.
No, that's true. Well, or you get unemployment, but only for so long, and then after that, right?
Yeah.
Depending on your, but yeah, well, that's true. And so, I mean, it's important to just get out there and look at every single opportunity you have as just that, as an opportunity. A lot of times people will get into a mindset where they'll say, well, I'm not working at the place that I want to be working at. I'm not doing what I want to be doing. And instead, I'm doing this thing where I'm working at this part-time job that I don't want to be at. Well, if you look at the negatives of that situation, then you're definitely going to put yourself down. But if you look at the positives, hey, I'm bringing some money in. I'm finding a way to pay my bills. I'm finding and I have some additional time that I can put toward achieving what it is I really want to achieve. Then
yeah.
It changes the equation. And don't get me wrong, you know, I'm not a believer in the law of attraction. You know, there's this idea of the
I'm
law of attraction.
I'm not either.
Well,
it doesn't seem to work for
me. You attract what you attract the circumstances of your life. I don't believe that at all. Things happen, and it's. But I do believe that the internal beliefs and values that you have, the attitude that you have, does play a role in how you choose to experience what you're experiencing. And if you go in with a negative a perspective, then you're going to see the negative. If you go in with a positive perspective, then you're going to see the positive. And believe me, this is something that's taken me a while to figure out myself. I'm by no means. It's not like I was always doing this either. It took me a long time. I actually became self-employed because I lost my my technical writing contract in August of 2008. It was gone, and I started to look for work again, and the economy bottomed out, and I couldn't find any work, so I'd gotten certified as a coach, and so I just said, all right, well, I'm just going to go out there, and I'm going to be, I'm going to do the best I can. And let me just say that, you know, for a long time there, I wasn't making a lot of money. It wasn't like I was the embodiment financially of what wealth was, but I had the positive belief and perspectives most of the time. Occasionally I would get down on myself, and I used that to keep me looking for opportunities and finding and doing whatever it was I could to move myself forward. And I had some help along the way. It wasn't like I was doing this all alone. And in fact, that's one of the things that that hopefully we've all really learned, is that we need to rely upon each other more. You know, the notion of the individualistic person or the self-made person is pretty much a lie. The truth is that we all, to one degree or another, rely upon each other, and unless we're willing to talk to each other and say, this is where I need help, nothing's going to change.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, did Daniel tell you how he and I met, actually?
No, he didn't.
No,
oh, okay. I have my own radio show. That's my baby, my daughter. You know, I'm quite serious about this show. And it's Will Reggae Party, which will be on tomorrow night on Radio Fairfax. And I was volunteering for Telepathic TV, which I normally do because my show is first, then their show is after my show. And Kevin was over there. Kevin Bard, I almost forgot his last name, was over there, and he bought Daniel, and we met from there. Because what I want to do seriously is I want to be on radio, but I want to be on radio where they pay me to be on radio, which hasn't happened yet. But while I'm waiting for that big break, so to speak, I can fine-tune my skills with Main Street Universe and with World Reggae Party, because, like I said, World Reggae Party is my show, so I create everything for that show. You know, I pick the music, except for, you know, when I get emails from people about please play this, or people that call me on the phone, please play that. I pick out the interviews, you know, I research the interviews. It's my ball game. The whole thing is my ball game. And I just feel that both of the shows together and these other shows that I want to do for Main Street as well, it's going to put me in a better position for that career in radio and for that career in TV instead of just sitting down and playing with my thumbs or something.
Mm-hmm.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh.
I was just listening to you. I was just listening to what you were saying about how you two had met.
Yeah.
Okay, say that again, I'm sorry.
I was listening. Station, the local station here, which is also, it's FPA, Fairfax Public Access, so Janice and I met there. Kevin suggested it, and I went up there to see an episode of, there's a television show that's been playing on the air for about 14 years called Telepathic TV that they filmed from there, and she was once a host on our network, too. So, yeah, it's actually quite a beautiful studio up there at FPA.
It's a beautiful studio.
Sounds like it.
Well,
yes.
Janice, we're going to go ahead. Let's move on to some aspects of Taylor's book, which I did
okay.
notice was introduced by Crystal Blanton, who's an acquaintance of yours, Janice, I believe.
Yeah, she's cool.
And
she's actually one of my authors as well, through Amanian Press.
Oh, okay.
Oh, cool. Didn't know that.
So, Taylor, let's just start with a little bit on after the introduction and in the first chapter. You did get into a little bit of defining things already earlier on, and this is about, you know, what's your definition of wealth? Maybe just breeze over that briefly. What is wealth, and how would you define it?
Well, I look at wealth as being able to live life by your own rules, essentially. And what that really means is that you are doing what you love to do. And let me emphasize that doing what you love to do doesn't necessarily mean that you're working for yourself. It just means you do what you love to do, whether you're working for someone else or not. In my case, doing what I love to do means working just for me. But that's, so that's important to note. But that you're doing what you love, that you're surrounded by the right people in your life, and that you are essentially putting together that you're living the right way for you, that you're living a healthy life, that you have positive relationships with the people in your life, and that you're improving your financial situation on a regular basis. And I want to note that for many people, a lot of people define wealth as money. I saw a snarky little post here on Facebook a little bit ago by Andre Venimus saying, well, I won't write a wealth magic book until I'm making seven figures. Well, that's nice, but I don't see making seven figures as a definite definition of wealth. A lot of people equate the idea of wealth with financial wealth, like how much money do you have?
Right.
The problem with that approach is that I can tell you that just because you have a lot of money, it doesn't necessarily mean you're wealthy. There's a difference between being rich and being wealthy. You look at the celebrities, for example, a lot of them make a lot of money. Some of them are in debt because they don't know how to manage that money. They are, and even without that, they don't have private lives. Now, if that's your idea of a definition of wealth, great. Now, obviously, there are some people who are very rich and they've done pretty well for themselves, and that's always a nice thing to have. But the way that I look at wealth is that you want to have a healthy relationship with money, but you don't want money to again be that end result. It's not the end, it's a means to the end. Now, I'll admit that at the time that I wrote that book, and even now, I have a bit of debt. I am working it off. However, I've also been in situations where I didn't have debt at all. And one of the reasons I chose to write this book is because I thought to myself, most times when people write a book on wealth magic, they write it with the idea that, whoever writes it was just was just successful right from the get-go. And they were making lots of money, and you know, they never had any problems. And I thought, that's not realistic. The problem with that is that if you don't share the mistakes that you made along the way, if you don't share how you handle wealth, how you've handled wealth in all of its various forms in your life and the things that you've discovered, you can't really describe what wealth is. You can only describe, you describe an idealized version of it, and you sell people an idealized version of it. Now for me, wealth has involved making some mistakes. It's involved occasionally falling back into debt. In fact, if you become self-employed, guess what? You're going to experience a fair amount of debt just in that journey, because being self-employed is an investment of a lot of money and a lot of effort.
Yeah.
However, if it's doing what it is that you really want to do, it'll work out, because you're going to put that effort in. You're going to plan by design. So when I look at wealth, I really see it as a – I define it as a plan, you know, the shaping of an identity. And the recognition that you're going to assume that identity and manifest it in your life through whatever means necessary, that you're going to do it in a way that explores all of the avenues of wealth, not just finances, not just health, not just love, not just job or business, but all of the above in relationship to each other.
And that brings me to a point that I heard actually from people who are quite successful. And this was about people in the natural food industry, meaning Whole Foods and all of this, who Whole Foods now makes a ton of money. And it was a great story about the emergence of these sort of companies, and some of them are quite wealthy now. They started off, some of them, as quite renegade hippies with barely anything but a little piece of property and some ground to grow food. But the whole thing being is that they believe in a multiple bottom line. And you really hit the nail on the head. The bottom line isn't just the amount of money you're making. Yes, profits are important because we all have to pay bills. But there are other bottom lines to consider. And these are like extremely wealthy, you know, seven-figure people, some of them, like our friend who criticized you there, who, by the way, was our guest last week. Andrea was
our guest. Yes, he was.
So
he's
went,
probably
Andrea
listening
was,
right now. Hi, Andre.
This week. But so I don't know if he was just saying that in jest or what. I don't know if you two know each other or
we know each other, so we occasionally make jests at each other. So I just kind of laugh about it.
Yeah.
And
I just think it's kind of a funny thing because, you know, so many people get caught up into that illusion of, you know, this is what wealth looks like, and I don't agree with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think that having tons of money is certainly nice to have, but again, if you don't have a good relationship with it, what does that mean? A lot of people will win the lottery, for example, and a couple of years later, they'll be even further in debt than before, because one of the things they didn't do was take the time to define what wealth looks like.
Or they'll become broke because they spent it all, or
right,
they had other
people
help them spend them all.
Right, they didn't take the time to define what that really looks like and how that's going to shape their lives.
So now to my next point, and anyway, that was a great point. And you made a couple of great ones because it's very timely, this show, because these conversations have been on my mind so much this year, including when I was talking to Janice earlier tonight. I was talking about I'm not stable enough. I haven't been a good enough planner, you know, and I'm highly skilled. It's not that I don't have the passion. It was that in the past I lacked the long-term planning, as you were talking about earlier in the interview. and without making this about me beating myself up, and things are getting better. I've been generating some more work.
Now, you're not the only one. I had some issues with long-term planning, too. But that unemployment kind of puts you in, you know, kind of puts it in the spotlight. Hey, you need to long-term plan.
Right. And now I want to get into when you were talking about in your book wealth and deities and entities. And I know you've talked about creating entities and stuff in the past and in your other Manifesting Prosperity book that you wrote. And I thought maybe if we could discuss that chapter just a little bit, wealth with magical deities and entities.
Sure. What would you like to know? What stood out to you?
Well, I was talking about when you mentioned the creation of an entity, and then you kind of gave it a name and stuff like that, whenever things would come in and flow in. And I believe the one that you gave it like a nickname that sounded a little bit like, you know, I love money.
Yeah, that one.
About creating a
money. Yeah, I love money. That was the entity, yeah. Well, you know, that was an interesting one that I created. I did create it. And again, I didn't find that one to be very effective. And I realize now that the reason it wasn't effective was because I was focusing on money as a short or as the end result, instead of really focusing on what I was going to do with the money.
Okay.
What the real end result should be. In other words, okay, if I'm bringing money in, what am I going to actually do with it? How am I going to use it? Because the thing is money loves to move. That's one of the reasons why a lot of wealth magic doesn't always work the way that people think it should. Money loves to move. Money is always moving. If you look at if you look at a credit card, for example, you have interest. So you buy something, and as soon as you buy something, you're basically starting to pay interest on it because money loves to move. It loves to accumulate. So then, and it's the same thing with a savings account. Savings account will have a 1% interest on that, where it'll add like 1% to whatever the amount is. Not a lot, by the way, but you know, there it is. But still, money loves to move. And so the I love money entity didn't really factor that in. It was just like, oh, I want money. But it didn't say, okay, well, what am I going to do with that money? A better entity that I actually created was a sales entity. And I created the sales entity to teach me how to be better at sales, because I realized that I didn't feel very comfortable with selling. And when you're a business owner, you have to go out there and sell to some degree or another, unless depending on what it is. And in my case, it's a service-based business, so I have to go out and sell. So what I ended up doing was going out and creating a sales entity that would allow me to actually generate some that would help me generate sales. But what it did is it pointed me first and foremost, it basically said you need to learn more about sales. So I started finding books on sales. I basically started discovering those and reading them. And what ended up happening is that the sales entity basically said, all right, now let's focus on your sales process. And I learned to develop a process for sales that I became very comfortable with. What I found in the last year is that, and I created this entity in 2012. So in the last year, in 2013 in particular, I got very comfortable with my sales process, and my sales have actually increased exponentially. And this year, the first 3 months of the year, I have brought in more money than I've ever had before in my business because I've improved my sales and because I'm comfortable with my sales process. And I'm continuing to improve on it as I continue to work at it. It's an organic process. So the sales entity will occasionally be like, okay, tweak this or try this or do something different here.
Oh, yeah.
And so what ends up happening is that by choosing to focus on that, I've actually given myself something measurable to work toward, and I've designed what it is that I'm doing better. And of course, the money that's coming in is very nice, but I also have very specific ideas about what I'm going to put that money toward. So for example, I know that I'm going to put that money toward, first of all, continuing to pay off some of the debt that I still have at this point in time. And I'm going to put some of it toward the retirement funds that I have. And I'm going to put some of it toward some of the projects that I want to continue to work on. So by having those specific goals in mind, I'm moving the money along as well.
Right. And one thing I would like to ask you about, and of course, and forgive me for this, Taylor, I was quoting from your first book from the question, not from the one you just wrote. Your other book, Manifesting Prosperity, the essay book, when I mentioned the I Love Money thing. So I guess you have progressed since then.
Well, as with everything, you hopefully improve over time.
Right.
You know,
right.
you work on it, you continually refine it.
And, of course, and I've heard you mention before that it's progressive, everything, you know, it's a progression. And my next...
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question then.
Go ahead.
Would it be good to see wealth as a progression, not as something immediate like money is?
It would be good to see wealth as a progression and to plan for and to plan toward it because money in and of itself is a very immediate form. It's not a it's something that again is very short term. And really money is a survival ticket, as I like to tell people. You know, think of if we were living 10,000 years ago, you know, our survival ticket would be the spear we used to hunt down food, you know, the berries that we picked. Well, now that's what money is. It's our spear. It's our survival ticket. It's what allows us to buy the essentials, et cetera, et cetera. But money, again, in and of itself, money isn't wealth. It's what you do with it. It's how you plan for it. And it's how you plan for all the other things as well that are factored into wealth. So if you're going to go ahead and plan for wealth, you need to ensure that you actually have a plan in place and that you recognize that wealth is a progression. You know, there's no such thing as an overnight success. Anyone who's called an overnight success will say to you, no, that's not what happened at all. I worked my
yeah.
butt off for years, and then... suddenly everything came together. And that's how I look at, like with my business. I've worked for 5 years to get to the point where I'm at now, and now things are really starting to come together. And even now, you know, I'll look back on this a year or two later, and I'll say, wow, well, even compared to where I'm at now, where I was at a year or two ago, you know, it felt like things were really coming together then, but now it's really coming together now. So I mean, it is a progression. Things change over time. And if you're doing it right, you are part of that change, and you're proactively planning for the change and helping to create it.
Rather than reacting to the repetitive problem, like we said earlier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
an easy trap. I'm not saying it like that's easy to break that cycle, but you're talking about it's one thing, doing it's another. But that is such an important lesson, that not reacting, but going with progression and natural forces, using the ones that are working, basically.
Yeah.
And going with that. And here's an interesting point I wanted to discuss, is elemental associations. Sort of, I guess, now maybe some specific magical point. I read a great book recommended to me by my good friend, Mr. Darren Bouquet, who's a host here on Sunday night on Main Street Universe. And it's called Money Magic by Frater U.D. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that author or not,
mm-hmm.
Taylor.
Yes, I am. Yes,
and,
I am.
And he believes in, contrary to what some, but not all, associate money with the element of earth, casting a spell that has something to do with the earth. He thinks that money, A, wants to live with other money and also wants to flow, like you mentioned that earlier. It wants to be spent. If it had a spirit, let's just say if money had a spirit, it wants to be spent and sent out into the world as well as saved and building interest, but not saved like in a stuffy, heavy way, but only for the purposes of collecting more of itself. And I'm curious of your opinion on the elemental association of air with money.
Well, I think it's an interesting association. I'll admit that I've associated money with the earth. I mean, it's kind of a natural in terms of, you know, in part because of minerals and other things which are typically associated with that. I could see money as a form of air in the sense of how people spend it, and the fact that people don't necessarily are pretty airheaded about it. So I could see it from that perspective. I don't know that I would really even attribute an elemental aspect to money, though. I would really look at money as its own element. Instead of trying to attribute it to earth or air or fire or water or whatever, I would actually look at it as its own element. I think that if we look at it as its own element and really understand it from that perspective, we would actually develop a much better relationship with it. And in my own work with money, that's actually how I've chosen to look at it. I see money as its own element. I treat it as such. And I recognize that in working with money, I'm really working with the fact that money does want to move. And I'm recognizing that, and I'm finding ways to channel that desire to move into my favor instead of letting myself react to its movement.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah, and that was part of the air association, I think, was his – there's a picture of Hermes on the front of the book, and, of course, we're talking about your book, not too much somebody else's, but there's, you know, it was all about – the flow, the going through the air, don't make it too heavy, keep it light. However, I do agree with you when you mentioned the idea that the ticket for survival in the modern era, like it or not, just happens to be these little notes that
heavy.
Carry around or hopefully carry around in trade for things. Like you said, the old day, it's a spear. Remember the old spells, the original first spells, what were they for? They were for a hunt, unless I'm not accurate, or a harvest or fertility. They were for let's go and draw a painting of our hunt, and some people even said they would act out the hunt ahead of time, sort of either a practice or maybe some sort of magic working, don't really know. I mean, wasn't there. Or maybe I was there, but forgot. But the point being, here's my next question, of course. What about the, because this happens, and you know what happens, and you knew this question was coming probably. What about the morality of invoking the forces of the universe for the purposes of gaining more money or abundance? Because it is a debate in the pagan community. I even remember Gerald Gardner sometimes saying, oh, no, your powers will be gone if you do that. You can't wish for money. And, of course, some of those early magicians were very wealthy. So Aleister Crowley, he lost his wealth, and others, William Yeats and all that. So, again, that's my question. What about the moral question? Is it okay to engage the universe for money?
Well, obviously, I disagree with Gerald Gardner.
I do too.
I don't think there's any problem with it, but I think that if we're going to do that, again, the question comes right down to what are you going to do with that money? So I would say if you're going to ask the universe for money, you better have a very specific idea about what you're going to do with it. And a good example for me was that years and years ago, when I was just starting to hit the festival circuit as an author, I didn't have a car at the time, so I did ask for money. I did a money magic working, but I was very specific and focused on getting money magic for buying that car. So I had a defined result. I knew what I wanted from it. It wasn't really even about getting the money. It was about getting the car, and the money just happened to be the means to an end.
Is all I'm saying.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing magic to achieve material results. I think, though, that we need to understand what those material results really mean to us. I mean, I've done a fair amount of wealth magic over the years. I've done wealth magic in the form of love magic to bring, you know, partners into my life, not specific people, but to bring the right person to me at the right time. I've done magic to certainly bring some money into my life to get something that I wanted with that money. But I haven't done it frivolously. I've always done it for very specific purposes. And it's how I approach wealth magic even now. Everything I'm doing is done with a long-term vision in mind. It's not done for the short term. If you're going to do it for the short term, it is pretty frivolous at that point. You have to think long. You have to plan for the long haul. Where do you want to be, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now? How is that money going to help you get there? And what are you going to do if you don't have that money to get that? I mean, those are questions that I think need to be asked that often aren't. Yeah. And in my case, a lot of the magic I've worked over the last few years hasn't been for money at all. It's been to improve my skills as a business owner. It's been to improve how I handle money. It's been to improve how I do various things. Because by learning how to improve those skills, I've actually been able to increase money. And at the same time, again, I've always had that long-term defined idea behind what that money is going to be used for.
Right. And folks, you're listening to Taylor Elwood. His book, his new one out, is called Manifesting Wealth, Magic for Prosperity, Love, and Health, which I think you just touched on a little bit right there, saying it's not all about the dollar bills. There are multiple bottom lines and different ways to get to the economic bottom line, including sharpening your skills. And as I've heard before, there was a quote I liked from, it was some New Age guru in the 80s, but it was a great quote. I forget the guy's name. When he says, when you're asking for money, you know what you're really asking for? You're asking for people, because people trade in money. So you sometimes ask to attract the right people, because animals don't trade in this stuff.
Animals don't have money. Animals don't need money. So, yes.
So
that's a very good point.
Bringing in the networking, the skills, the right context, all these things, going with the stuff that is going positive. So I think, Taylor, you've had some great points to make. And not reacting to bad patterns and bad repetitive situations, as so many people do. They go, gosh, I'm going through this again. How many times has this happened now? It's changing the entire pattern. So I thought that was a great point that you made early on, and it's been repeated throughout the show.
Can't be repeated enough, quite honestly, because it's it's so essential.
I agree.
If you want to change your life, you have to first look within yourself and change the pattern, the belief, et cetera, that's keeping you where you're at. And this isn't to say that you're attracting problems, but it's always important to recognize your own role in the problem. No problem occurs to you just because you're never entirely blameless. There's always some investment on your part. It may be an unconscious investment, but it's there.
Right. And Taylor, we're getting close to the end here of the hour and of the interview. This was sort of a slightly double part show where we were doing the interview with you for an hour, and then we're going to do a brief Ostara ritual. So I just wanted you, in closing, to plug anything you want to plug, anything you wish to promote.
Well, my website is magicalexperiments.com. The new book is available and out, and certainly all of you are welcome to check it out. And beyond that, I just want to thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Thank you for coming on the show, Taylor.
Yeah.
We've had some great guests. We've had Chris Penzack. We've had Oberon Zell. We've had Selena Fox and many other great
people. We've had the Gamas.
Pagan World. And
Lilith Dorsey.
Lilith Dorsey and so many. It's been a blessing to do this. And so finding this
path.
And then finding a way to make things work and to network and everything else. It's just a great experience to meet interesting people. And I've talked to you privately as well, Taylor, and you're very bright, and I can definitely see you being a good business coach, and I may contact you in the future.
I may too.
So,
well, thank you.
Everybody, the link is on this show page to Magical Experiments, so if you want to find out what Taylor does and you happen to be listening to this now or in the magical time machine that is the archive listen, then you can see it in the description there. It's in blue linked in the description. So again, thank you very much, Taylor Elwood, for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much, Taylor.
Thank you, and I will leave you two to your Ostara ritual. Good luck, and have a good evening.
Thank you.
All right.
You too.
Okay. Sorry, Janice. I just turned your mic back on. I'm going to do a brief song and come right back, and we'll do a brief ritual. And that was Taylor Elwood.
A real brief
nice
one because I have like a half a bar. Seriously.
So we'll be right back.
Okay.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
This is Dan Michael reminding you that Main Street Universe is in fact a network of 6 shows, including this one, Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time currently. And it's myself and associate producer Janice R. White.
Hello.
By myself and Kevin Baird. And tonight Taylor Elwood was our guest. On Thursdays, we have Queen Mother Imaku with Wat Tau, her show of the Kemetic African tradition, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And on Fridays, we have Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour with Jesse and Nichols George, who's in the chat room, I believe, still. She's still there. The author of 4 books.
Hi, Jesse.
And Activating Compassion, the Companion Workbook, as well as You, Me, Life, Dreams, and Its Companion Workbook. So 12 at midnight, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. And then on Sundays we have Mr. Darren Boucare. Darren is a reader of palmistry and tarot at Marie Lavo's House of Voodoo in the magical city of Janice.
New Orleans, NOLA.
7 p.m. Eastern Time. Then on Mondays we have Science of Light. That was a funny symbol. It wasn't quite open. And that's with Randy Goldberg at 10 p.m. Then we have Susan Weed, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Green magic, green medicine. We've been talking about maidenswort, croneswort, and motherswort. Chickweed is maidenswort. So Susan.
Yeah, so it was a good show last night.
Oh, yeah, Susan is great. I was feeling a little under the weather, but she did great. But it's her show.
Yeah.
I feel much better today. And then...
Well, you know, there's other shows coming up, hopefully.
Mr. Kevin Baird right now is on Fridays, and you can find Kevin at www.templeofgaia.com. And Kevin's the creator of the Horizon Oracle. And... he's an artist as well. I have some of his art hanging in the wall, the frozen smoke, and he makes vases, vases. You say tomato, I say tomato, depending on where you're from. So it's Kevin Baird, 5 p.m. Eastern Time right now on Fridays. So now we're going to begin our brief Ostara ritual. Behold, I do recognize that all space is sacred in the Druid's way. And on this night, we're here to honor the gods and goddesses of old. Join us this evening, O Shining Ones. Forgive us of our errors and grant us your blessings, your balanced wisdom. Hear us. Hear your children. And as your children, we are humble before you. Mother of all, we pray that you bless and uphold our right. As you uphold...
Mother of all, we pray.
It is to you whom we will all eventually return. Earth Mother, accept our sacrifice.
Earth Mother, accept our sacrifice.
Powers of inspiration, attend the shrines of our souls. Quicken our tongues that we may work this rite in beauty and truth. We are gathered to do as the wise ancients did, to make offerings to the powers, to the gods, to the mighty dead, to the she, to the spirits of old, to keep the Druid's way. Vishé Ali!
Vishé Ali!
In the depths flow the waters of wisdom. Sacred well, flow within me.
Sacred well, flow within me.
We will now light the sacred fire. Behold, I do light this flame, knowing that the fire is always burning in our heart. Sacred fire, burn within us.
Sacred fire, burn within us.
Between the worlds stands the great world tree, holding fast the place between this world and that of the mighty ones. We will now invoke the gatekeeper. Gatekeeper, Lord of the Between, keeper of roads and opener of ways, join your magic with ours to guard and ward the gate of this working. Gatekeeper, accept our sacrifice.
Accept our sacrifice.
Let the great world tree hold fast the way between the worlds. We will now invoke the ancestors. Old ones, ancient ones, those who came before us, those who are us, remember us as we remember you. Ancestors, accept our sacrifice.
Ancestors, accept our sacrifice.
The gate is open. The water, the fire, the great world tree will hold fast the worlds between. Now, at the end of this, I will simply offer a song. One going on my new album, Songs of the New Old Ways. I can't remember if I played this one on the air before, but if I have, well, I've tweaked it a little, so here we go.
prayers to the sky.
Return as they were. All things be released, and remember that there is no such place that is an unsacred place. Bishay Ali. Good night, everyone. You've been listening to Main Street Universe, the show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than may have ever imagined. Good night, Janice.
Good night, Daniel.
And we all hear from you, or you will hear from us, more accurately, next Wednesday.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.